KSCU Santa Clara presents. Robots Attack. Movies. TV. Video games. Comic books. Tech stuff. News. Music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at RobotsAttackMe, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
All right, welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joe, and with me is...
Caleb.
And...
Jason.
That's right. We are here to rock your geek world, as we do every Monday from 6-ish to 8. So, gentlemen, how have you been?
Been good. Been really good. Went to go see movie in theater this weekend, which was fun. Man of Steel, we'll probably talk about that later. Other than that, life is pretty good right now.
Nice.
Jason, how about you?
Let's see.
Oh, and been playing a fair amount of Tiny Tina's Assault on Dungeon Keep.
Oh,
Dragon
okay.
Keep.
Yeah, yes. we can hit that up too in the game discussion.
Yeah, I've been doing that as well. Enjoying that quite a bit. Ended up working on laying out lightning diverters on C-130 nose for most of the day today, and I never have like much of a problem with it, except I have one of those co-workers who is helping me out on the project that needs to share sports information with the foreman like every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so for most of the time he wasn't all that much help, but
separate issue, I think. Yes, no, kind of.
Yeah, anyway. But other than that, things are going pretty good. Can't complain any more than usual, I suppose.
Nice.
Right on. How about you, Joe?
Haven't been able to do anything really fun lately. I've been working on resume cover letter stuff that I'm still working on. So,
That's good.
I guess that can be sort of fun, but not,
yeah,
not
yeah.
so much.
Yeah,
hopefully, the end
result. It depends
result
on what floats
is,
your boat, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, the end result of landing like a really cool job is
that
the
would,
fun part, but
yeah.
You know, like.
It's the getting there that's sometimes a little little challenging.
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing mostly. Haven't really been able to game on anything, so I've been focusing on that. Although
yeah, we were wondering if you were alive or anything, actually.
I think probably the best thing or fun thing that I did was yesterday went to like a family reunion up in Discovery Bay, so that was pretty
fun.
But
yeah.
But yeah, as far as game, movie, stuff related,
nothing.
Nothing new since last we spoke.
Uh-huh.
Unless, yeah, I don't, nothing's popping in my head. No.
But did you get Tiny Tina's Adventure, at least on
your
hard drive?
I did download it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I figured since it always takes forever for some reason, I was like, okay, I'll throw it on before I hit the pillow and go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And let it download at least, and then I'll get to it when I
get
to it. So
it's worth it, I think. It's there's a lot of little things that are just like, ha, they put that in there. Oh, they put that in there. Hey, they put that in there. That's kind of cool.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah, it is jam-packed with that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely hit that up, or you guys will talk about that in the game discussion since it came out last week. But
yes.
I guess the other thing that was sort of fun that I did was IGN lets you edit their wikis. So I went through, because originally I wanted to find what new heads you get from the Tiny Tina DLC, so I can kind of figure out, like, okay, which one do I want to shoot for, and which one do I not really care about. So I found pictures of those, and I went to their wiki. They didn't have any of them up yet, so I threw them up in there. And as I was going through, I noticed, like, wow, they don't have a lot of pictures for stuff. And then there's others, like the Assassin page. There were head, like, pictures missing from things. It's like, okay, you know, I guess I'll edit this. And
cracks
so
knuckles.
I did some of that, and that was kind of fun doing, like, going through and figuring out, like, the code. Okay, how do I, all right, if I copy, okay, a dash, forward slash, this makes that, check it. Nope, that's not right. Go back. Okay, yeah, that's how I do it. And then so,
yeah,
so that was kind of fun, just something different.
Yeah, it's funny how rewarding that stuff can be when you do actually dig into it. Plus,
wiki markup is straightforward enough that you can kind of figure out by looking at it what it's actually doing, as opposed to, like, some versions of HTML where you're just kind of like, man, it's just alphabet soup in this place.
Yeah.
So I looked. I was like, well, I don't know if anyone's going to actually look at this stuff since it's been a while. Like, a couple of them had comments. They were like 9 months old. So. But hey, they need to be there. So no one else is going to do it. I'll do it.
Yeah. It's important to have all the information be accurate.
Yeah.
If you're using it as a resource, there's no point in it putting bad information out there.
Yeah. Especially since that's where I'm trying to get a job. It's like, I want people to go there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of fun things, we got a good show for you today, tonight, however you want to look at it, early evening-ish, whatever. We mentioned earlier in the core we're going to hit some of June's summer movies. I know it's July 1st, but last week was part two of E3, so you're getting June movies on the July 1st.
But it's the first day, so it's sort of bleeding over.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's what we're going to hit there. In the game discussion, we'll talk about Tiny Tina's, maybe something else, see if anyone else has played anything. And then, of course, we'll have Caleb's Corner.
Yes. Going to look into a little bit into how Pandora pays out.
Ooh.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know they did.
They do.
Learn something new every Monday from 6 to 8. That's it. That's all when you learn stuff. And, of course, the news will bring it to you. I want to tease the folks some news before we hit into our first music break.
Oops. Let's see. The edge of our galaxy is being established as we speak.
What?
Huh. Okay. I have an inventive youth. That's it.
Joe?
Maybe I got later. Stories.
Very good.
Got stories for days.
Yeah. They'll probably be game-related stuff, as usual. So.
Yeah,
makes sense.
That works.
Man, I should totally get the Aerosmith song, Living on the Edge, for your Edge thing, and then because of the universe. And
hey.
It doesn't really make sense, but...
No, it's good.
But anyway, we're going to take a quick music break and then come back with the news. I'm going to play the track Out of My League from Fits and the Tantrums, off the album More Than Just a Dream. Alrighty, you're listening to Robots Attack. You're on KSU Santa Clara.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack. Before we get to the news, let's hit up the new releases.
Yes.
I've got the movies coming out this week in theaters. We have Despicable Me 2 and Despicable Me 2 in 3D. That's coming out this Wednesday. Because, see, you know, 4th of July is Thursday, so they're, you know, want to get out before holiday weekend and all that jazz.
Right.
We've got Kevin Hart, Let Me Explain, also coming out on Wednesday. We have The Lone Ranger coming out on Wednesday also. And then moving to Friday, we have some movie called Absence. We have American Made Movie. We have Hammer of the Gods. Just Like a Woman. Stuck in Love.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. And The Look of Love. That'll
round out the love.
Oh, one more.
Okay.
Because I do remember seeing a trailer for this one. The Way, Way Back.
Alrighty.
Oh, two Steve Carell movies this week. Yeah.
Well, there you go. So let's see. The coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this week is Blood Runs Cold.
What?
On Blu-ray and DVD. And then The Dragon Pearl. On just DVD, then Inescapable on Blu-ray and DVD. Actually, that's the wrong kind of voice to read that movie, and since it's about a Syrian military police officer, different. Anyways, Santa's Summer House, and that was sort of the. So those are the ones that looked at least moderately interesting. For Blu-ray and DVDs, it was pretty slim pickings this week.
Alrighty. Well, in the world of video games, we got some DLC for Black Ops 2 that's dropping this week called Vengeance. We've got Dark. We've got the Mortal Kombat Complete Edition. It's like for PC.
Is that complete with a K?
You nailed it. The Inquisitor, The Plague. We've got Scourge Outbreak. Let's see. We've got Crash City Mayhem, Shadowrun Returns, and Super Splatters to round it out.
All right. Let's see. Over in the world of comicdom, things are a little bit more exciting than on Blu-ray and DVD. Detective Comics number 22. Batman is faced with his mirror image, but it's not the Joker.
Ooh.
Green Lantern number 22. Lara Flees, who we mentioned last week, finally makes it to Oa, and Hal Jordan is pushed into a hard choice. Avengers number 15. This is a prelude to their new pan title Infinity Saga, and then or multi-title crossover, I believe is the technical term. And then the Superior Foes of Spider-Man take a walk on the villainous side of the Spider-Man universe. Then there's Catalyst number 1. Superhero comic with a down-to-earth sensibility. The Transformers Robots in Disguise, number 19. Ooh. Yes. Ongoing series. Feel free to go collect those if you feel so inclined. Satellite Sam, number 1. It's a noir mystery set in 1951. And then Grimm Fairy Tales Oz. It's a subtitle. Oz, number 1. The Witches of Oz are looking for a secret weapon, and their quest brings them to Kansas.
Ooh.
Done. Dun, dun.
Yeah. Reversal.
Yes. And that rounds out our comic pick, our comic noting for the week.
Nice. All right. Well, before we hit the news, let's get this PSA. We got San Jose Animal Advocates. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join us at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook.
News.
All right, gentlemen, let's give them some news.
All righty. Well, as I mentioned, the edge of our solar system is finally being reached. 35 years since after Voyager was launched, it is now fast approaching the edge of our solar system boundary. But where exactly is that? And that's something that scientists are kind of trying to determine right now, is, you know, how big is our solar system? And just something that sort of blew my mind is that, I don't know the exact figures, but I know that the Voyager 1 is still traveling at several hundred thousand meters a second. It's going really, really quickly. And it's taken
sounds fast.
35 years. 35 years to reach where it is now. Space is really freaking big, people. This is so cool. And we're about to reach interstellar space, which means that pretty soon we'll be getting telemetry from deep space. And that's just going to be so awesome.
Until he sounded like Kirk when he did 35 years.
Yeah.
Our new mission, to seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no probe has gone before.
In deep space.
Into deep, deep space. Or something like that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, there you go. There's a they suspect that the Voyager, which was launched in 1977, 1 year after the very first Apple computer, the Apple One, was released, they expect it to continue running for it was only built to last for 5 years. The original satellite was only made for five years life expectancy. We've gotten 35 years out of that, and they expect it to continue running into 2020 with a possible shutdown around 2025 due to distance and all that other good stuff. But
I don't know. I think it's just showing off at this point.
it's a bit of
an overachiever, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's like, here's to over-engineering things.
Yeah. Oh, and then unless it gets captured by aliens and turned into some sort of...
Mm-hmm.
Here's hoping.
Vigor, and it comes back to destroy us.
Star Trek references abound in this story.
Yeah, seriously.
From one of the best ones.
True. True story.
Yes. 20 minutes of looking at the Enterprise. Another 20 minutes in that warp thing. It's been a while.
Okay, moving on from that. I don't know if people have heard much about this, but Google has been doing a science fair of sorts where they're collecting people from around the globe and letting them do science-y type things. And of course, these are high school students, not just any old person. I tried to apply, but they got on my case about it.
Not having a science degree or something like that.
Right. But anyway, I'm glad that I didn't now, because one of these students did something that I thought was kind of neat, and I'm all that matters, really. So they created a hand-powered flashlight. And it's not that it's powered by, like, cranking or anything like that. It's powered by just holding it.
So the human power of the human body is now actually powering a light.
Exactly. It's powered off of heat. These tiles that are called, I don't know if they're supposed to be pronounced this way or French, so I may be completely screwing this up, but Peltier tiles.
Peltier.
Peltier. I had a feeling that it was Peltier.
Hmm.
It's because of the tons of French that I speak.
tons of it. All the time.
Well, anyway, this girl, Anne Makosinski, she ended up coming up with this idea of using these Peltier tiles to create a completely hand-powered flashlight. It took her a lot of trial and error and whatnot, but she eventually was able to get a single LED flashlight, which... actually are getting pretty powerful these days anyway.
Yeah, something to be sniffed at.
She managed to get one of them to run off of simply being held. Now, the thing is, she's from Victoria, British Columbia, not to, like, downgrade them or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it does explain this part, is that these things apparently run much better in the cold than in the heat, because you need the heat difference between the open air mm-hmm. and your hand. And so in a place like British Columbia, it's a little bit better to be able to run this thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of 15 finalists, and I'm actually interested to find out who more of the finalists are and what they came up with. Hopefully not, like, volcanoes and stuff like that. But anyway, the grand prize for the Google Science Fair is $50,000 and a trip to the Galapagos Islands.
That's kind of rad.
And since she's the only one that I've heard of, and I think this is very cool, I hope she takes it.
No bias or anything.
No.
Yeah, that is kind of neat, because you figure in a lot of those areas where it's super cold, like, if they can make things like this, that's less supplies that they'd have to store.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
For, you know, and also batteries, like, they turn really weird. They behave very oddly in cold. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Like, their potential for power, like, drops, like, off of a cliff. Like, huh. you take yourself in, like, in the middle of something, and, like, in a really cold snap, and, like, your stuff in there usually gets you, like, half a day to a day, gets you about, oh.
5 minutes.
Yeah, about an hour or two.
Okay.
So it's like, whoa, what the heck happened to these batteries? It's just that they're cold and the reactions don't happen fast enough. But that would also be like kind of interesting if like you could work it like into like headlamps and stuff like that. So like you can just like mount it onto your body and then.
And that makes sense too, because you lose a ton of heat straight from your head anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's a little bit more perfect. Right now, the limitations of it runs continuously for about 20 minutes. I don't know what it needs after that. I don't know if it needs to sit around or what.
Mm-hmm.
Love.
maybe. Which is awkward.
That's a completely different project.
Right. Moving on. she built the flashlight for about $26. Considering with all of the materials she spent on it.
Wow.
And impressive. Yeah, I'm kind of tempted to build one now too, because literally it's some aluminum tubing wrapped in surrounding PVC tubing
mm-hmm.
with these Peltier tiles someplace.
Fascinating. That is super cool.
Yeah, that is very cool.
I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, I like smart people and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Go science.
I wish I knew more of them. Oh.
Hey-o. <I'm> All right. Well, from flashlights that work on the human hand to the Xbox One Kinect will scan redemption codes.
I saw that. Yes.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I grabbed this from IGN. Huge shock if you know me.
What?
Apparently, Microsoft's Mark Whitten confirmed on Twitter that Xbox One's Kinect will be able to scan and redeem QR codes.
I'm sure that I will be able to do that too, but how many people will have it is
the question. Yeah, since it's coming with, you know, you're getting the new Kinect with every Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
Referencing the recent Reddit image seen below, it's if you're going to require Kinect, you know, then at least give us this option to enter our 15 codes that come with new games. It's a little, you know, image there. Ha-ha,
right.
Funny, you know,
right.
joke, as the internet loves to do. It seems the days of punching in 25-digit codes is a thing of the past, and yeah, that would be really nice. I mean,
yeah.
I like my chat pad. It definitely helps, but yeah, if I can just hold it up and scan it in,
right.
mm-hmm. I will gladly take that.
That's a little bit better.
That's some future tech.
Yeah, that's a good usage of something they've been working on for a while now.
Yeah, yeah, it makes me wonder if at first they were working on an app that coordinated an extension of the Surface app that mm-hmm. would do that. And then they were like, wait, why are we trying to run this through a camera that we have no idea the specifications and all that when we already have the camera
yeah.
on there?
Yeah, that would be really cool. I wonder if there will, if they will also extend that to the glass app, because that would also
the smart
be kind
glass,
of
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that
I
would be
if
kind of neat.
Tie in something with that where you can also use your phone's camera
mm-hmm, to do
to
other
scan
things.
And yeah.
yeah,
but yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, especially since the new Kinect isn't getting much love lately. I thought I'd give mm-hmm. it a little bit of love.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I found another cool story about robots. This one is about a police officer who has been working on a retired police officer. Correction.
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
Who worked for in Baltimore? Who has made a assistant robot that will be used to to basically be an assistant to crime scene investigators.
Huh.
Because they don't leave fingerprints behind. They don't need to, you know, they can go into more dangerous situations or otherwise unsavory places. And it's humanoid, so it can know, be controlled by a person on the outside if they needed to, or be autonomous. And it's just really interesting. It's also, they're also hoping to use it to help kids that are you know, in, like, I'm guessing juvenile detention and stuff like that. But, like, you know, the just basically improving interactions between people and robots and creating safer environments for police officers, which is pretty awesome, because a job that is as dangerous as they have it. And
it's cool that they're doing it without, like, the typical scary tracked vehicle with big mechanical arm.
Yeah, it seems like one of the things that the guy was really trying to do was make it as human accessible as possible.
It's kind of Johnny Five-ish.
I think that was part of his inspiration.
It's a small Johnny Five without the tank treads.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And the other thing that's kind of neat about this robot is that he's working on version 2 right now, and he's going to release that as an open source project, hardware project, to the world so they can start improving it, or other departments that have the resources can start making their own and stuff like that without a lot of legalese getting in between.
Mm, yeah. So. Who needs legalese?
How about you? What you got next?
I was just savoring the awkward silence. okay. This is a story from Gizmodo that I thought was kind of cool, and it's probably going to be way obvious that it's up my alley just because it's another one of these 3D printed type of things. But they came up with this idea of using the 3D printing technology to make a cast for your hand, like if you broke your wrist or whatnot, which is kind of an extension of all of the clothing that people are coming up with these days and doing some interesting things with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing about it to me is that it's not like a regular, ugly, big, chunky plaster cast or anything like that. Okay. They went a different direction. They made it out of variations of hexagons. So it prints out this weird, like, web-looking thing onto your hand that, well, not directly onto your hand, but that attaches to your hand. So it has a really cool look to it. It sort of looks like it should be some sort of, like, goth girl sleeve or something like that is the best thing that I can come up with without making it completely unwanted for men, I guess. But it's very cool. It's a very cool goth sleeve. Anyway.
So can we create more interesting patterns than just... Here we're putting a day glow wrap around it, so it looks a little bit less like a cast and more like something you'd actually want to wear.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the thing that's obviously nice about it too is because it has this web opening to it, it lets your arm breathe, so it's no more of that, like, trying to stick a ruler down the sleeve and whatnot. The added bonus to it is that it should actually take less time to create also. Well, let me qualify that a little bit. You can create a plaster cast in nothing flat. You can wrap it on somebody's hand really quickly and get that ugly thing on there.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, it takes quite a bit of time to actually set up and dry.
Mm-hmm.
So the trade-off is that this thing takes more time to make, but it never has to dry. So all you do is bolt it together once it's made, and it's like 3 hours done.
Okay.
So.
And it'd be customized to the person as well, so it'd probably be more comfortable overall.
Perfectly customized. Ooh. Thank you for bringing that up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Synergy.
Yeah. We work well together.
Synergy unlocked.
And then the other thing that the creator, let me see if I can find his name.
Well, while you're looking for that, you're listening to Robots Attack on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
That's right.
And so maybe is this person. I don't know if this is a real name or not, or if he changed his name just so people would be attracted to the story more. His name is Jake Evil. With two L's.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So I don't know. I need to look it up, see if it's an actual last name or if he... It's just being.
It's like evilly.
Right. I don't know. And his name completely derailed me, and I braced myself for that too. I was like, okay, I got to mention this guy's name because that's something right there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the thing that Jake Evil also presented is that this technology is really going exponentially faster and faster and faster too. Mm. So in a matter of time, it's gonna be like a half an hour, and you have this thing instead.
Okay.
So it could get pretty impressive really quickly. And I sort of just want one to look cool.
I could see that.
Yeah, it would let me. I'd be done as a sword fighter, but. Because I wouldn't be able to move my wrist as well as I could before, which I was doing tons of sword fighting before.
It's true. Yeah. Always on the weekends.
Right. All over the place. Sword master.
Yes.
Don't read anything into that. I shouldn't have even said that.
Too late.
Too late. Well, before I get to my last story, Caleb,
yes?
Why don't you tell the folks how they can be one with the show?
That's right. If you have heard something very interesting, or you want to comment on something that you've seen, or want to inform us of something that we have missed, you can contact us. You can hit us up on Facebook, do a search for Robots Attack, two words, or you can go to our Twitter account, which is Robots Attack Me. And finally, there is our email address, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And if all that's just like, wait, what? I can't write that down fast enough. Write down this, robotsattack.me. There is archive episodes of all of our shows. Plus, we have the interact button, which has links to all the things I have mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, and email.
Everything.
All you need to keep up with the Robots Attack crew.
Yep. And our Facebook page has all the links to the stories we talk about, so you can go and check them out at your leisure. Especially all the pretty pictures and stuff like that.
Yes.
Sometimes there's video also. So
Obviously,
don't do any of this stuff if you're driving at the moment, but, you know.
Obviously.
Yes.
Why would you?
That would be against the law and bad. And we don't want our listeners to crash or get a ticket or anything like that.
Or if they really believe heavily in Darwinism, then they might do it too.
That's true.
They're that devoted.
Something I did forget to mention that in the video game releases that they just mentioned actually today that's coming out. Depending on what system you're using, it's coming out sometime this week.
Okay.
It'll vary, but the Walking Dead 400 Days is dropping this week. So I think if you're on Xbox, it's like you got to wait till Friday. But I think if you're on PlayStation, it's tomorrow or Wednesday. Okay. PC. I don't. You know, it's
who
varying.
Who wants it tomorrow
days,
anyway? Because Vengeance comes out tomorrow.
That's true. There you go. You can play that, and then Friday you can have your when you're on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
As the Brits say, or
yeah.
I don't know, someone says that, right?
Yeah. The Brits.
You can,
those of the United Kingdom tend to say holiday.
Okay, see, there you go. I'm trying to speak to globally our audience.
Yeah, yeah, we're streaming over the internet.
That's
can
very
hear us.
True. It's very true. Yeah, so, you know, I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, that I forgot to mention that is also dropping this week, so you don't have to send us an email about that, even though.
It's true.
Thank you, if you were. But okay, so my last story. Is sort of like half good news, half bad.
Okay.
It's titled, we grabbed it from IGN, it's The Potential for Hellboy 3 Ain't Looking Good.
Oh.
Legendary, the company, likely won't make the sequel. So the story is, when it comes to Guillermo del Toro and the press, it's not uncommon that he gets asked about the ever-elusive Hellboy 3. While promoting Pacific Rim at a junket recently, the filmmaker said that he's been talking with star Ron Perlman about a potential threequel.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, I hate giving pieces about it, Del Toro told Shock T Drop, but last night we were at dinner and Ron said, I would be very happy to do Hellboy again. When are we doing Hellboy 3? I would love to see Hellboy 3. He didn't say he would love to do, he just said he would like to see it, but today I'll ask him, one of the producers. Perlman had similar hopes that Del Toro and Legendary would re-team for another Hellboy. Quote, not just anybody can make this movie, he said. I loved working for Legendary, and I know for Guillermo, working on Pacific Rim was one of his greatest experiences. The reason I loved working for them is because Guillermo was so happy. I came in 6 months into the shoot and he seemed as fresh as a daisy, simply because he was working for someone who appreciated and supported his outlandish visions of what he wanted to put on the screen.
Nice.
My immediate silent wish was, wouldn't it be great if these guys came in and helped resolve the Hellboy series? Later that day, however, IO9 followed up with Tull, who sounded less confident that Legendary would be able to make the movie. Quote, seeing how we don't own the rights to Hellboy, there may be lawyers that would get upset about that. But, you know, in Guillermo's world, maybe he can make that go away. I don't know. Laughs and brackets. So, I've heard this before. It's like, Del Toro, Perlman sound like they, you know, they would definitely be up for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, what studio, you know, the rights. One studio owns the rights to it, might not want, might look at the books and go, this didn't make as much money as they could. Nah.
Right.
Or, you know,
yeah, I've never understood
that
why
stuff.
That happens. Mm-hmm. I can understand them being a little bit afraid of doing it, but why they hold on to that, like, so doggedly when they've decided that it's not viable. Is it literally just out of spite for whoever the next studio is that might make it into something good?
I don't know, but
it's so weird.
I wouldn't put
it
past them. I hear there's some weird stuff that happens down there.
Or just a safety thing, like, oh, well, what if it suddenly becomes super popular 20 years from now?
Yeah. Who knows? But yeah, I could definitely see, like, how, you know, if there was a certain company that, you know, the director, especially, I mean, if you look at a movie like Pacific Rim,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of a gamble if you really look at it. Like, if mm-hmm. you were to pitch that,
yeah.
you know, if someone else, like, that kind of sounds like a cheesy Godzilla movie. I mean,
yeah.
How much do you want for this movie? You know,
how much do you think it's going to make us?
Yeah.
And how much risk is there? Yeah, no,
well,
thanks.
Actually, that's part of the story for the movie, too, is that apparently the main reason why Del Toro was able to sell the movie was that he came up with some new little bit of tech that was going to save them, like, drop the cost by one half as far as the special effects.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. I don't.
We'll have to wait
I'm
and
really
see.
Curious. But yeah, apparently that was the big, like, selling point for them taking a gamble on a Godzilla type movie.
Hmm. Interesting.
It looks like fun, but
yeah.
So is that going to wrap up our news, or was there?
I think so. Unless
okay.
Anyone else?
I don't want to talk about anything else.
We are done. We are out.
Right.
No, right. We're still going.
I'm in a happy place right now. We just got and talked about Del Toro, so.
I
would totally have
his
adopted
now.
Babies.
All right, so that's going to wrap up our news portion of the show. We're going to take another music break and then come back with Caleb's Corner. Want to tease the folks again, just in case they're tuning in now and they unfortunately missed all our awesome news.
Yeah, if you've missed the news, what's coming up in Caleb's Corner is we're going to be talking about Pandora and how they pay royalties.
The planet?
No.
An avatar? Or
no, the music internet streaming music radio service.
Oh, okay. So not the planet in
no,
Borderlands 2 either.
No.
Okay.
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 No, Marcus will not be making an appearance on this one.
And not the box.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Just so the audience is cleared.
Right. There's a lot of Pandoras out there.
There's a lot of Pandoras out there.
Mm-hmm. So for some reason, it's a popular name.
Yeah. So we just want to, you know, clarify for the folks listening.
Just because nobody owns the rights to Pandora.
True. All right, let's get to that music break. I'm going to play the band Wax Idols, the track Dethrone from the album Discipline Plus Desire. All right, you're listening to Robots Attack.
Wax on.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
Welcome back to Robots Attack.
I was going to say it. All right. Enough of your funnin'.
I was just having fun.
I know.
I like saying "Welcome back to Robots Attack."
It is fun. I will definitely grant you that. And as you heard from the bumper, this is Caleb's Corner.
Khalib's Corner.
If you prefer. where I get to opinionate and proselytize and or whatever.
And ruminate?
Ruminate sometimes.
Nice.
The views expressed in this section do not reflect those of Robots Attack, nor those of KSCU Santa Clara.
Or people with rheumatism.
Or them either. They are just my own thoughts and opinions. If they decide, if the other guys like my thoughts and chime in, that's their own thing.
Before you hit your topic, though, let me tell the folks real quickly about the fireworks extravaganza.
Extravaganza!
On Thursday, July 4th, from 5 to 10 p.m., the city of Santa Clara will celebrate with the return of the fireworks extravaganza show in Santa Clara Central Park, 969 Kylie Boulevard. Arrive hungry, bring your lawn chairs or blankets, and enjoy the evening. Grab a meal or snack from the food trucks on Kylie Boulevard or one of the many nonprofit organizations selling food in the park. For more information, call the Parks and Recreation Department at 408-615-3140. That's 408-615-3140.
Extravaganza.
That's right. Very cool. So I mentioned that I'd be talking about the wonderful world of Pandora Radio, not to be confused with Pandora the planet or Pandora the other planet. Anyways, or the box of Greek mythology. We'll just let that. Well, those are their own thing.
Its subsidiaries.
Yeah. Pandora, the radio service, a couple years ago, or last year? Recently. Tried to get some legislation passed that would, they called the Internet Radio Fairness Act, which the idea was to reduce the amount of the rates that they pay because it is while they are making money as a business, mm-hmm. They are paying around 50% of all they make back out. So right. There's not a lot left to, you know, keep the lights on.
Because they're not a charity like us.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And, you know, when, obviously, since they're in a certain level of business, you can occasionally get information about other businesses in the same area, and they realize that their competitors, a.k.a. terrestrial radio stations and some of the other internet radio stations, were not paying the same rates as they were.
Oh, okay. Well, so, why was that?
Well, there are several theories about that. No one's given them a definitive answer. The best answer that they were given was that all the other stations were connected to a terrestrial station of some sort. Like, they were either owned by Clear Channel, which is Viacom, or a number of other, like, you know, massive media clearinghouses.
Okay. I'm sensing back street deals here.
There's some...
not by boys.
Yeah. There's some suspicion of things like that. Last month on the 24th, June 24th, an artist put up part of his royalty breakdown, and he highlighted the fact that the song that he helped produce or the song that he wrote on Pandora was played over a million times,
mm-hmm.
and the amount of money he made off of it was only
16, 32 cents.
No, $16.89, which is
wow,
less than a T-shirt. And
I knew it was bad, but geez.
By comparison, he also highlights that for 100,000, for slightly more than 100, slightly is a relative term, slightly more than 100,000 plays on Spotify. He's highlighting the internet stations. Spotify, he got $12, and YouTube for for around 150, he got $1.95. So there's a wide disparity in how much a person in the music industry earns from being played on internet radio.
Mm-hmm.
I do not begrudge them trying to earn money off of internet, off of their work. If they put the effort into make it, they should be rewarded for it. I firmly believe this. And he, this artist was singling out Pandora as kind of, these guys are sort of, you know, not doing much for us. Oh, Okay, here's another one. Sirius XM, which is satellite radio, said they played his song 179 times, and he made $151 off of them.
That's a bit better.
That's definitely better. I don't know exactly how, like, each, you know, when record deal companies make deals with radio stations, obviously there's, you know, there's fees and, you know, marketing fees and, you know, all the stuff that goes into making some of this happen and how it works out. So,
so sum it all up for us. What's happening here?
What's happening here is, actually better summed up by another article I found, which analyzed this other artist's article. The guy who wrote the follow-up kind of, he actually works in like advertising and stuff like that. So he like knows how some of these deals work out, and he kind of broke down the numbers on how it works out that, you know, that you get lower royalties off of different types of media and stuff. And the basic premise that from his analysis of it is that what it really comes down to is that the other stations aren't paying enough in their fees out to the artists. Okay. So the really fair thing is not to have Pandora pay less, although that'd be kind of awesome, give them a better baseline. But if they could start enforcing that the other guys would pay more. If they could do that, then there would be a balance because everyone's paying out what they're supposed to be or what they should be, I guess would be the more accurate term. And, you know, then artists are making more money. The record companies are probably happier because they're still making money. The only people that might be moderately kind of befuddled as what to do would be the radio stations. Or their multimedia conglomerate owners. So it's a curious, weird mess that is these licensing deals. So for the conclusion that he came up with was that Pandora paid out $1,370 overall for the song that was played, this one particular track.
Mm-hmm.
And then he breaks down how that is divided. The songwriter gets 3%, the session musicians get 4%, ASCAP BMI gets 1%, Sound Exchange gets 5%, publisher gets 3%, the record company takes 44%, and the performer takes 40%. So performer is obviously whoever did the actual performance, and the guy who wrote the original article was the songwriter, so he gets a slightly different cut than say the performers, who are the actual voices and instruments being put out there. I'm not sure if he's also a performer, but he's definitely the songwriter, and his cut is an unfortunately small 3%. So it's like I said, it's one of those things. It's like this is why media pricing and why media being shifted through different avenues is getting really complicated, and why like even Netflix, like their catalog is huge, and then all of a sudden parts of it vanish. Well, it's because parts of it gets shifted back to cable, and when it goes on to cable, they can't play it on Netflix. And so this is just another example of how these things are just a little bit weird. There's not a quote unquote bad guy. There's a whole lot of just weird mess that's going on.
A lot of wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, there's a lot of oddness overall, and maybe we should all work on trying to streamline this a bit, because internet radio isn't going to stop.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't see it stopping. It's because almost all media transmission at some point, I believe, is going to become an internet or distribution of some sort, because when, you know, you get music on your cell phone, it's coming over the cell airwaves or Wi-Fi, which is being generally going to draw it in through the internet. Your television and your movies are going to start becoming more and more internet first or internet streamed as its primary mode of transmission, as opposed to the airwaves, which are still very important. And we salute you, terrestrial radio stations, as we are one of them.
Yeah.
But the nature of technology progression, I think, is going to push almost all of the stuff into a more into a more internet-focused system.
Okay.
Cool.
I have a solution for this entire problem, and you might call it outlandish, because it probably is. But I think it's cryogenics. I think we ought to all be frozen until all of this stuff becomes public domain. And then reboot Netflix at that point, and so everything's accessible. And
yeah, with the copyright systems going, we will never have anything in public domain
again.
Well,
we definitely put all the copyright people into cryogenics.
It's interesting,
Right.
Interesting option.
Mm-hmm. It's time to Demolition Man those people.
Well, if you have some...
I'm sorry.
If you have some thoughts on Jason's suggestion or, you know, Caleb's story, definitely let us know. Hit us up on all, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and email
about
us.
Think out there. Cryogenics.
Let us know what you think. All right, so that's going to wrap up Caleb's Corner.
Yes.
We'll take another music break and then come back with game discussion. We're going to hit up the D&D Chronicles of Mystara and the Tiny Tina Assault on Dragonkeep DLC. I'm going to play a track from Vampire Weekend called Hudson from the album Modern Vampires of the City. All right, we are Robots Attack.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Radio stream. Want to listen to KSU even when you are not near a radio? Stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. All right, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. We are now in our game discussion. We're first going to hit up D&D Chronicles of Mystara. I believe Caleb has had a chance to try it out.
I have, and it is exactly as I remember it in the arcades, which is both good and bad at the exact same instant, because it's...
Okay.
It's... Because it still has all the same flaws that the original game had, which were not very many, but they were kind of silly at the same time. But it also plays just like it did, so it's a really wonderful retro feel.
Okay.
And the game is a like kind of a Golden Axe-like game where it's kind of that slightly isometric view, hack and slash, beat up all the things that aren't your party members. And
so a xenophobic way of looking at the world is what you're saying.
Well, most of the other things on the screen are going to be against you unless they're fleeing villagers. So,
oh, okay. And you can't attack them?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But
well, that's good.
Yes. The game is actually still quite fun.
Even though you can't attack fleeing villagers?
Even though you cannot attack the fleeing villagers. This is correct. One of the things that made this game kind of unique was that besides your usual attack, jump, and fast attack, slow attack,
all the hacky slashy things,
yeah, they had a fourth button which would cycle through your items, be they magical potions or extra weapons or, you know, treasure or what have you. You could use that to affect, you know, extra things in the game, since having a magic button like in Golden Axe is a little bit different. Like, you know, you got so many of those little blue things, and it would create a specific spell. Like, you actually could pick up multiple different kinds of spells. Like, you get like a scroll of this, a potion of that.
Because it is D&D.
It is, yes. It's still based on D&D, and that's that would be AD&D for those who care.
Addend.
Yeah, because you did a lot of adding and subtraction, because it was a mathematical expert that put that
so
together.
So thank goodness it was made into a game.
Yes.
Yep.
Or a video game.
Yeah. But it's a lot of fun. The artwork holds up astonishingly well, although I kind of wish they had resed it up just a little bit for the for HD, but it's not bad. It's like a lot of the other kind of... But Namco or something like that recently released...
The Namco?
released an arcade box, like, revival set where you can get a bunch of old games, and they do a similar thing where they put all this information in the sidebars, because it's 4x3 formatted screens for the time. And,
oh, okay.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, it was a good walk to memory. A lot of fun.
Cool. All right, moving on from that, we've got the Tiny Tina Assault on Dragon's Keep.
Speaking of D&D.
Yeah. See, a nice little segue.
Yeah, there you go. All
right, so I have not been able to try this out yet, but you two gentlemen have.
Yes.
So my question is, do you like it?
Yes. Yes, I do. Jason?
Let me think about that.
Oh, come on.
No, it's really cool. And it's,
would you say it's your favorite of the Borderlands 2 DLC?
Oh, geez. It's the most carefully crafted out of all of them so far. I have to give it that. Like, to me, I liked the feel of the Pirate's Booty one quite a bit, but it doesn't compare as far as the depth that they have put into this.
Yeah, they stuck a lot of both Easter eggs and, like, fun game mechanic additions to this particular thing. It's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely everything is a super uber nerd joke. Like, everything.
Yeah, some of them are lost to me because it's a pop culture reference I don't exactly attach to yet, but it's still a lot of fun.
Oh, okay.
Do
you find that since, for some people, the character of Tiny Tina
is annoying,
rubs them the wrong way?
Right.
Do you find that there's any difference with her here? Like, do you think she could grow on people?
They added some stuff that would at the same time make her slightly more endearing and maybe more annoying, so it doesn't really change the character all that much.
Okay.
But I'm afraid of giving out spoilers because that's part of what is the charm of it in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, it does open up her character a bit more. Like, you get to know more about her and kind of, like, you get a better feel for her personality rather than just, like, because in the main game, she's a little over the top. In this game, she's still over the top, but it works really well within context, I think.
Right. There's little rays of a heart in it also. Like, since she is the person running this D&D game effectively.
So for those who maybe aren't familiar with it, like just a real brief rundown of what this DLC is about, like.
Right. It's supposed to be in the middle, after the main core storyline is done. The heroes of the story, the characters that you play normally, are busy doing other things. So it's Tina running a game with the characters that you normally play as the characters that from the previous game are playing with in a D&D style game.
It's a bit meta that way.
Right. But it's hilarious that way too.
Yeah. So, like, when you're actually inside the DLC, it's like playing a fantasy style adventure, but you have sci-fi weapons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but for the most part, I have yet to find the sword shooting gun, which is in all the trailers.
But yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, it looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I don't know if you have, but I haven't found the magic spells per se either.
No, I haven't gotten to that.
And I was looking forward to that, the replacement of grenades as magic spells. I have a feeling that's specific grenades that you'll get through the course of it.
Okay.
Or a specific grenade mod, perhaps?
Well, that's what I meant.
Okay.
But yeah, there are so many little touches that are really cool too. And places where they kind of go over the top on the D&D stuff, just because as like a D&D nerd, it's like, wait, it doesn't work quite like that. But you lose track of the fact that sometimes you have that dungeon master who's kind of evil.
Yeah.
Who makes you do things, even though it's not really in the rules.
Yeah.
So in that way, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. There's always it definitely plays the whole dungeon keeper's prerogative on whether rules are obtained, held or not held.
Yeah. And it's cool too, because there are certain crates that you find that it's literally you roll a d20. And that's supposed to affect, like, what comes up in the crate. And
the neat thing that they put in it too, they put a whole bunch of things in it that are based on Iridium, which at that point in the game, you should be getting a fair amount of it, just because it seems to be the expansion spits out a little bit more of it in general too.
Yeah, this one in particular.
But they have little, in different spots where they have the different dice types from D&D, like D12s, D4s, and whatnot.
Okay.
They form like miniature statues that you can trigger them in order to get boosts.
Okay.
By paying iridium to them. You pay like one iridium, refined iridium, whatever, and it'll be buffing up all of your ammo count for a specified amount of time, or your health, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And they have just tons of neat little references to other fantasy-style games, too. It's not just D&D. It's like every fantasy thing that you can think of, they throw something in it for you. Like they have sort of the classic Zelda thing of fairy that likes bugging you.
And pots you break to get items out of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And the fairies are kind of cool too, because they're shaped like the Maya character also.
Oh, okay.
and they're constantly telling you how great you think they think you are because you're so homicidal.
Yeah, they're a little bit sadistic, but they're sort of awesome at the same time.
Right.
Nice. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon's Keep DLC and the game discussion on Robots Attack.
Yes.
So it sounded like you guys are liking it.
Yes.
Obviously haven't finished it yet, right?
No, I have not finished it yet.
An extra bonus too. They have a side quest that is a pretty good portrayal of the Dark Souls video game. Also. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Whoever made this, like, definitely has played their fantasy games.
Right.
Like all of them.
It has fake things where you're fighting against online players in as if it was an MMORPG also.
Okay.
And yeah, every fantastical thing that you can think of, there's some reference in there of it.
Mm-hmm.
So to wrap it up, one final question.
Yes.
Since it sounds like it is definitely heavy fantasy based, would you still recommend it? I mean, obviously, if someone has bought the season pass, I mean, they're going to download it because it's free, quote unquote, in there. But you know, say they didn't get the season pass, they're thinking on stuff. If they're not huge fantasy, you know, players, are they still going to like this? Do you think is it still worth downloading? Or
I have a feeling the payoff is going to be in the end of the storyline, which we're not at yet.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it is going to create a little bit of a satisfying ending, considering all of the events that happen in the game.
Okay.
I have a feeling that's coming, but I don't know for sure.
But how about if someone's not super into fantasy, may not get, like, as Caleb mentioned, maybe some of the pop culture references or something might go over their head.
Right.
Is there still enough of that core Borderlands 2 experience that makes it worth still picking up, you think? Like,
or yes,
I think so.
Okay.
I think it might not be. I think it'll probably come down to is whether Tiny Tina annoys you or not. If you're not into that stuff and Tiny Tina annoys you, don't bother.
Yeah, that's true.
But other than that, I think it's going to be well worth it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's got a lot of the feel of Borderlands 2 in terms of like the essence of the gameplay rather than the actual like story.
Right. Okay.
It's tons of tongue in cheek. It gives a little bit of more heart to Tina and spins an interesting story.
Yes.
Cool. Alrighty, well, I look forward to trying it out at some point. All right. Well, before we get to the core and take our last music break, I'm going to tell you all about the San Jose Animal Advocates. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in their local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org. and look for them on Facebook. All right. So we're going to take another quick music break, come back with the core. We're going to discuss a few of the big June summer movies that we saw.
Yep.
And, yeah, so we'll be right back. Robots Attack, I'll play a track from the band The Fresh and Onlys called 20 Days and 20 Nights off the EP Long Slow Dance. All right, we are Robots Attack.
You are now entering the core. Enjoy your stay.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central Talk Show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. You are in the core with us on Robots Attack. We're going to be discussing a couple of the June summer movies. I know it's July 1st, but deal with it. All right. So the first one we're going to hit is World War Z. And it appears that I am the only one who saw this. So, gentlemen, would you like to ask me anything about said Z movie of World of War?
So, how? First of all, general impressions.
It doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like a couple episodes of a mini series. I can understand a lot of the woes that it was having during production.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause yeah, the ending just sort of ends and you're like, okay. And
so you're thirsty for more is what you're saying.
Yeah, it really does feel like a couple episodes of a miniseries. Like it jumps right in to the madness that is the zombie
apocalypse.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It jumps like right into it. And then the other thing that's sort of unfortunate, at least for me, if you've seen any of the trailers or like a couple of the ones they've put out,
mm-hmm.
you've seen about almost 90% of the movie in really,
really
small chunks, but yeah, you've seen most of it. And so that was kind of disappointing.
That's too bad.
Like there were part, you know, there's it as you watch the movie, obviously you get more expanded to those parts, but
right.
a lot of the excitement is kind of taken away because you've seen it all
right.
already. Mm-hmm. I would say if you're a fan of Brad Pitt, I like Brad Pitt. He does help carry the movie pretty well. Like
mm-hmm.
if you enjoy his films or think he's a good enough actor, he does a good job of keeping you interested in the movie.
Right. What about his wife? I liked her in The Killing.
So. Yeah. She doesn't get a whole, like she doesn't get to do a whole lot. She's in it like here and there in parts. I mean,
okay.
I don't mm-hmm. really want to spoil stuff, but yeah, it's weird. I'm like, I never really watched a bunch of The Killing or anything like that.
Right.
But, mm-hmm. but yeah, for some reason, like I have this odd attraction to her. I forget her name, but
she's attractive.
Yeah. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, she does a good job. She's not in it a whole lot, like I said. The two kids are good. Like though, their sort of family is they do a good enough job. I mean, you care about like what happens to them, but it does pretty much focus on Brad Pitt. Like once he sort of gets on the mission that
mm-hmm.
he gets sent on,
it seems
it's
very
mostly,
much like Brad Pitt, man of action.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's mostly, I'd say for me, like some of the best parts are, this doesn't really give away a whole lot because you see it in the trailer, but there's a part where eventually he goes to Israel and
mm-hmm.
he gets paired up with this Israeli soldier and
mm-hmm.
Her and, I don't know the actress's name, but her and Brad Pitt, their chemistry is like really, really good. Like,
okay.
There are parts when they're on screen and doing stuff I enjoyed. I was like, oh, okay. I cared about their characters and wanted to see like what was going to happen
okay.
to them. But yeah, it's weird. It's one of those movies. It's like, it's hard for me to really recommend. Like you could totally wait for it to come on Blu-ray or DVD
mm-hmm.
or Netflix, you know, however
right.
you view your movies on demand.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because it just feels like a chunk of a mini series, it's like, on the one hand, I enjoyed it well enough, but then on the other hand, because it didn't feel like a movie, I wasn't satisfied in that sense of it. So.
Does it seem like something that they're going to try and follow up with anything, or do you think that's pretty much it?
The way that it ends, they could go into, they kind of wrap up things where if they never make any more, it could end there, but they kind of could go into things that, I don't really want to say a whole lot. I wish they expanded on certain things more. It just really has that, like, I think there's more to this, but they either cut a lot of it or just couldn't figure out, like, I don't know. I could really tell why they had problems during production with this movie. It's okay. Yeah. But
all right. There you go.
So that's World War Z.
More of a technical question. How did you feel about the effects in the film? Like, did they support the movie? Were they distracting?
That's a good question. Sometimes the zombies were sort of unintentionally funny. Like,
okay.
When they're all grouped together in a lot of the shots, it looks like, wow, that's all CG. That's not super scary. And then certain parts where it would just be like a few of them, it was a little more intense.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were other parts where they would focus on certain ones, and it was like, I'm not supposed to be laughing at this part, right? But it is kind of funny, like the way they're having them do stuff. Like, one will like click its teeth, like, and you're like, this is kind of funny. Like, I know it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be sort of intense, but it's kind of funny. And there's like another one that's like behind this glass, and it's just like, it has, the actor has these really long dreadlocks and it's like looking out at, and it's like trying to be sort of spooky and stuff, and it's kind of funny. Like, I know it's it's like, it's not supposed to be, but it kind of is, unfortunately. Oh, and on that made me think of, it does a lot of, if you do not like the fast cut action stuff where it's just like, oh, a quick shot of this, like,
okay,
I know a lot of people don't like that. I don't normally mind that, but in this, it's pretty bad. So it's pretty bad. And I want to say the guy who directed it directed Quantum of Solace, and I want to say people complained a little bit about that and some of it. So if you don't like that stuff, it's going to take you a little bit to get used to.
Watch it in slow motion.
Yeah. it gets better as it progresses, but it seems like kind of the first chunk of it is a lot of that. And it was like, I wasn't sitting like super close, but it was just like, what is going on? Like, this, it's cutting too fast. Like, I know you're trying to do this to sort of build tension and stuff, but I can't really tell what's going
on. So add darkness on top of it and you have AVP Requiem.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did do Quantum of Solace.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I was wondering about that, 'cause like, so did the zombies that can sprint, did that like throw you off at all in terms of like their version of zombies, or
not really? It's like, you could almost not even really call them zombies. Okay. Like, they're a lot more like the ones from like 28 days later, 28 weeks later. It's like
rage virus.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, they're fast, and you know, it's not really like the ones you'd see on The Walking Dead or something where they're kind of slowish and they'll stop and like they're eating chunks of people. It's more like, oh, fast, grab somebody, bite them, move on. Like, so
interesting. Okay.
So anything else, or shall we move on to Man of Steel?
Let's move on.
All right.
I think that's all for me too. Yeah. Man of Steel.
So Man of Steel. So I've just talked a bunch. Caleb, why don't you give us your thoughts on Man of Steel?
Sure. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's still a flawed movie, I think, in some ways, but I think it's not the flaws do not detract from its enjoyment. It's not unlike Star Trek Into Darkness. Flawed, but very enjoyable.
Okay.
Jason?
This doesn't seem like it should be a difficult thing to say, but I enjoyed it a lot. I really, really did. It's sort of weird for me because I have sort of a mixed history of happiness and hatred of both the director and Superman in general. And this is the first time where I came away from it like, I think I really like Superman, and I think I really like Zack Snyder. It really threw me off, because I can understand that there's some stuff that you could probably be thinking about that find things wrong with it and so on. But it's such a good ride. If you can put that in hold a second or two, you will be right back on the roller coaster and having fun again. So I thought it was really worthwhile as far as that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely gets right into the action.
Right.
Just like you said, it sort of feels like a roller coaster ride. It, you know, it'll break for a little bit and then bam, right back into the action craziness that goes on. And
I really liked all of the super fights personally. I thought they were so cool. And even when it's just like Kryptonians picking on random humans, it's so sweet seeing it reminds me of Devil May Cry when you pull off like a perfect combo and you're just like jumping from one place to another and seeing things flying all over the place. It's really satisfying for some reason. Even when it's the bad guy doing it.
I really liked I'm spacing on her name, but
the main
evil Kryptonian chicken, right, quote unquote, like second in command,
pretty much
for Zod. Yeah, I thought she was awesome. Like I liked seeing her just like take apart Superman and just everybody, and just
that was really cool.
she was good.
But it's funny too, like the fights with her and Superman. Those would be the parts where I'd be like, "Yeah, I'm not into Superman at all," but he held his own in like pretty cool ways. I felt like it was satisfying seeing his reactions to these situations and how he'd managed to get the better of all of these different people too. And it's not even necessarily like I like that it portrayed the character about right in my view. It didn't try and have him like completely outwit everybody, which I mean he's not dumb or anything like that, but that's not his character. It's just that he manages to get the upper hand on everybody, but they did it in a satisfying way somehow. Like all of the other times I've seen Superman, it feels like cheap and like he didn't earn it somehow. But I'd kind of compare it more to like the feeling that you get from seeing like Goku get the better of somebody in Dragon Ball Z. You know he's going to. I mean, that's his thing. But somehow it was always satisfying in that. And here they've got that same feeling.
I definitely agree. It's like, it definitely has its cheesy moments, but I think you sort of expect that with anything about Superman.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's going to have those, you know, family, like, America, you know,
America.
Those parts. But overall too, I thought it was fun. Like, definitely not a perfect movie, but I had a good time watching it, you know. And I wished, you know, they maybe explained a few things a little bit more, this and that. But, you know, overall, I can't complain, since I was sort of afraid when I heard, you know, Zack Snyder directing it.
That set me back, too.
And I'm kind of a fan of him, and I was afraid, too, to be honest. And I mentioned this after the movie also, is that I think my favorite Zack Snyder movies are probably his worst movies. I'll admit it outright. But still, I mean, I think he managed... Well, okay, and the other thing is that I ended up saying after the movie, and you can confirm this, is that he completely sold himself as a director to me. Like, it was the first time where I felt like he was a heavy hitter director. Before, it always seemed like he had connections or something like that.
It
was interesting kind of like seeing this movie. Like, you can tell there has been an evolution in him as a director. Like, You know, it's not just 300 over again. It's not just Sucker Punch. It's not another. It's not another one of a movie that he's already done before.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly can see an evolution in terms of like maturity from going from some of those other films to this one. Like you can, he's still not my favorite director, but I can definitely see how he has changed and evolved and become much more of a better rounded director than I was expecting him to be.
Yeah.
For some reason, I want to say that his biggest strength in all of his movies is that he understands heroic. I know that sounds like really trite, but he gets heroic. He knows how to make a character heroic.
true.
Definitely. I'll vouch for that. There's one more thing I wanted to say.
Yeah, if you're just popping in, it's Robot Attacks on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. We're in the core. We're discussing Man of Steel. I would say, too, I like sort of the little twists they did with, like, sort of explaining Superman. Like, it was sort of like, here's a sci-fi movie that happens to be about Superman.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I
love the visuals so much.
Yeah, I like the... how they dealt sort of with his suit and the armors that they would wear and the different things. Like I liked that idea too. It was like, oh, okay, that's cool. That explains, you know, why he has this sort of suit or why they have, you know, different stuff. And
yeah, really early on, somebody told me that the Kryptonians had armor that looked like it was the Necromonger's armor from Riddick, and it completely ruined the entire idea of them for me. And then I saw him and was like, I got it, but it's so much cooler than that.
Yeah.
So much cooler.
When I was watching, I was like, man, this guy must have been, whoever designed this armor must have been playing Gears right before he designed this. Because not that it was the same, but there's a certain thematic similarity between the two styles.
It's a weird hybrid, like, locust necromonger armor.
Yeah, I liked the clear helmet, so you could still see the actor, eyes and emotions and stuff through it. But
still looked like armor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also like that their rebreather masks made them look like they had skulls for faces. I thought that was kind of a nice touch.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's definitely a lot of little touches. I mean... Mm-hmm. I can understand some of the complaints, and I can see if you don't like the style of it, it could kind of throw you off, because, I mean, like I mentioned, it definitely does sort of, not so much like World War Z, but it does, like, jump in. And
that's true.
It deals with a lot of the origin stuff as either sort of flashbacks or, you know, like, right away at the beginning and then, you know.
Yeah,
and I don't want to give away a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I felt like the origin stuff was handled really well. And when I first heard that Russell Crowe was going to be his dad, I thought it was kind of genius, but I was a little bit afraid of it, too. But man, he is perfect as that character. Yeah.
He was very good as Jor-El.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, a lot of the misgivings that I had was that the last time I'd seen him was in Iron Fist, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Men with the Iron Fists?
Right. And yeah, it's not that he was bad in that, in my view.
Yeah.
But much different character.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the relationship with Lois and Superman? Did you like how it was handled? Did it feel rushed? Did it feel okay? Or, you know,
I thought it was really good because it didn't end up feeling. It didn't fall into the trap that people seem to absolutely hate these days of having the Twilight-esque, like, love and first sight type of thing. It definitely played up that he's apparently hot. I don't get it personally, but I'm not into men, so unfortunately.
He has a swell chin.
He has a swell chin. You heard it here, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, I feel like it was handled pretty well, and I feel like I can understand her feelings for him. So
yeah, I don't know. I thought for what it was pretty good. It seemed a little bit rushed because like there wasn't, they didn't, like, for all the time they did spend together, they didn't spend all that much time together. But at the same time,
I can see that, yeah.
But and yet at the same time, like the times they were together were pretty impactful. So it's like I can kind of see where they were going with that.
Plus, she spent like literally a year or so just researching this guy and trying to find him. So she's invested in him immediately.
Yeah, and that's why I say, like, you know, I can see where they're going. It's like I think it still sort of works, even if it is a touch. Does seem a little bit rushed, and I really hope it gets a second movie, because I want to see them sort of develop this sort of this a little bit deeper, because I think that's where it will really begin to shine, is when they've yes, we know who Superman is, we know he exists, very good, now let's get into telling another really good Superman story, but one that's kind of about Superman and Earth. How does Superman and Earth like go together? Because that's, to me, those are the best Superman stories, when it's like when they really kind of dig into, like, what does Superman mean to Earth? What does Earth mean to Superman? How do the threats to Earth, like, really affect him and stuff like that?
Boring. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do have, I mean, this isn't really a spoiler. They've mentioned it before, but I like that there wasn't, like, kryptonite in it. Like, they
not
kept
per
that
se.
Out of it. Yeah. You know? It wasn't like, ha, I found this piece of kryptonite, Superman. No, what is my powers are
right.
You know, like
they had their kryptonite-ish circumstances, but it wasn't as like cheesy as like, oh, here's a glowing crystal. You're now
they found better ways to make Superman vulnerable in parts, and it's might not be what you expect.
Which I
liked, but. But yeah, I would agree as far as like the lowest thing, sort of what you touched on, how it's like they do the moments that they, it's like the moments that they are together, it seems like it's these really big moments, like things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of like you said, like a lot of it is she's trying to find him, and then they have like the times they do spend together, it's these really big moments, but there's not a whole lot of them. So
really brief moments too.
Yeah.
And they share a room. To be fair, the moments that they do share seem really genuine.
Yeah.
But they're so brief. It's like it's hard to really see them developing a relationship based on that. Or if they do, it's going to be a really weird relationship. Which is why I kind of hope to see something, a little more development there in a second film.
But that's what I like about it, too, is that it doesn't even necessarily have like a fleshed out relationship at the end of the movie. It's not, like, thrown into...
Yeah.
And I give them a lot of credit for that, because, I mean, any other instance, it seems like they try and do that, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what... there was something else. Did you...
I just wanted to say the it was Lieutenant Lara Lorvan was the main... it was Zod's left-hand lady.
That was her character name, or?
Mm-hmm. Laura Lorvan.
I thought it was something like Ool. Like something.
I have
Ool,
no clue.
Or something.
I'll
be honest. Like every time they started speaking Kryptonian, it was gibberish to me. So I didn't care. I saw a fairly attractive woman beating up Superman. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But yeah. And I liked the moments they had with you know, the Kent family, like.
Yeah, I think they handled that really well.
Gave you a different sort of take on, you know, Clark growing up.
Yeah.
Like,
and they threw Lana in there. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked that there's a lot of little touches of things, like, if you keep an eye out for, like, I saw during the, you know, big climactic fights and stuff, like trucks that said LexCorp.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes,
okay.
I saw that. I'm like, good. They left LexCorp in there.
I didn't see that, but people had mentioned how they knew it had to be there. But
yeah, well, if they're gonna do any other follow up films, Lex is going to make an appearance, at least in some way, shape, or form, as a villain.
Yeah, man, I feel bad though for like major cities now. Avengers. Totally trashed. This, totally trashed.
Right.
Two cities. One town and one city.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, three if you count the South Pacific, whatever was being affected by
the
tidal waves.
Matter.
Then he'd be wiped out by that device down there.
Eh. They didn't show too much of the surrounding area. So
right.
Eh.
Oh,
yes.
Lawrence Fishburne, I thought, was really, really good in it. I was not expecting him to be that character in any stretch of the imagination, but I thought he did a really good job, and he made me want to actually see more of that character, and I never cared about that character before, too, much like Superman.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I'm almost certain it made enough money that they greenlit a sequel. So
the sequel is coming.
I'll be curious to see where it goes from there, since it sort of sounds like if they ever do a Justice League movie, this is the universe that they're most likely going to set it in. So.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. That's why Nolan was involved.
And it's also why there's the rumors of Bale coming back to reprise.
It's been squashed.
Oh, that's been squashed? Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the stories I was contemplating doing. He said, nah, I'm not doing Batman anymore. Passed the torch on to someone else. He's like, I haven't heard anything about a Justice League movie, but... I'm done. We did our things.
Yeah, some of his outtakes made it sound like he was probably done.
So yeah, I know there's probably a couple other things, but I'm spacing on them. And anything else to mention with Man of Steel? It sounds like we all enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. I misspoke earlier. It's Lieutenant Fora Ul, FORA-UL.
Yeah, I thought it was something ool. But.
There are a cornucopia of cute girls in that movie, and I need to find out the actress's name of the military chick at the end.
Oh.
Who is like, yeah, he's kind of hot.
Yeah,
because I thought she was cute as hell.
Yeah, there's a lot of like little parts of people like, oh, I recognize that guy. I recognize that guy.
Yeah.
You know. A pop-up in it, but alrighty. I think that's going to do it for us, right, gentlemen?
I think so.
Any last
I words? Can't praise Superman anymore. It feels weird. I'm in an awkward space right now.
Okay.
Well, as of this weekend, it is number five in the box office. Pulling in a cool $20.7 million this weekend.
Okay.
And it's well over 200.
Number five, huh?
Yep, number five.
Oof.
And that's not giving me the numbers I want. Anyways.
Not giving me a total.
Took me to the wrong link. But anyways, it's doing quite well. I'm pretty sure it will get a sequel. Because I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what it ends up like versus, say, Iron Man 3, since that's the only one really like sort of solo superhero one that I think, you know.
Yeah, since Batman's not being made for a little while and Green Lantern was dead on arrival practically.
Well, I just, like this summer.
This summer. Oh, yes. Sorry. So.
Well, okay, the Wolverine. That's
true.
Another one that. So I guess we'll see which one of those three.
I'm so scared of.
Yeah. Hopefully it's good, but
hopefully it'll Superman it or Man of Steel it.
Yeah,
adamantium.
In the past 3 weeks, Man of Steel has grossed $249 million.
Okay, so, is that worldwide or just domestic?
It does not say. I believe it looks. Yeah, you know, these are domestic.
Oh, okay.
So it's probably doing very well internationally.
Yeah, they like the spacey stuff internationally.
Monsters U took first this weekend.
Because of the kiddos.
$45.6 million. Yeah. It's doing quite well. The Heat took number two, which is pretty impressive, with a $39.1 million. So there you go.
Yeah.
We'll see how it does in week two.
Yeah. There's more and more summer movies coming out. So
We'll
do this again for the July films, the end of July.
What?
Or maybe the very beginning of August. Yeah, depending on how the calendar schedule works out.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks again for listening to Robots Attack. I'll have Caleb tell you one more time how you can participate and check out the show and all that jazz, and then we'll head out of here.
That's right. Well, if you liked, disliked, or have a comment on anything that we have talked about this evening, You can find us on Facebook. Do a search for Robots Attack. That's two words. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is robotsattackme. And finally, there is our email address, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And if all that's just too much, robotsattack.me. From there, you can find links to everything I've already discussed. Pardon me, already mentioned. And you can also find archive episodes of our shows there. It's good stuff. Please we interact promise. With us. Please interact with us. We like it when you do. It makes the show better for us and better for you.
Yes. All right. Thanks again for listening. Have a great 4th of July. Or for our Canadian listeners, I think today is Canada Day. So happy Canada Day. I don't there know you what go. You do on Canada Day, but congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have a listener, Kane, our buddy that we game on right. as well. He's from Canada. So happy Canada Day, Kane, and the rest of our Canadian listeners. Alrighty, have a great week. Stay safe. Eat some barbecue or some vegetables if you're not a
meat eater.
Barbecue some vegetables.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, that's good.
And don't burn down a house with the fireworks.
Yes. And also barbecue some fruit too. Some of that's pretty good too.
Don't burn down the house with the
barbecues
and fruits.
And the fruits and the fireworks. All right. You've been listening to Robots Attack, one and only Geek Central talk show on KCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. I now turn it over to Robo DJ. Thanks very much. See you later.
Raccoon. Barada. Mixto.